Welcome to the last episode of Season 1 of the Standard Gains Podcast. And today we've got the one and only Brandon William, a super successful YouTuber. But who really is Brandon William?
So Brandon William right now is just a fitness YouTuber trying to motivate, inspire, entertain people. And that is just what I currently do.
All right. All right. That's
that's a quick little description.
Yes, and there's actually a lot of mystery around you. I mean, at least if you search on Brandon William, there's a lot of stuff I could find. I found four different ages, and I found lots of different people. Actually, a lot of football players, Brandon William. And I also found Vine Star. And then I was like, Vine Star? Oh, that's probably wrong. And then I realized, wait, your Instagram handle is BWE, Brandon William, Vine.
Yeah.
Can you explain a little more? Like, who are you? Who are
who
you?
Who is Brandon William?
That's right again.
Yeah.
So I'm 21.
Yeah, I found a lot of 20. I found 24, 25, 26.
We were discussing prior, and I said, he looks much younger. But yeah. Maybe, you know. So there goes the compliment. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Actually, no. Yeah, there's no compliment.
There's no compliment.
Yeah, I look young. Yeah. When I was 13, 14, that was like my start to social media. And I just started recording these quick 6-second entertainment videos. And some of them started just to take off on Vine, getting like several thousands of views. Then I got into the whole social media game from there. And I grew that Vine account before it died to 100,000 followers. When I say died, I mean the actual platform.
Yeah. Yes, they took it off for people, yeah. Basically, yeah. For people that are very young and listening, it's like, TikTok before TikTok.
Right.
TikTok would better,
exactly.
No.
Yeah.
So you grew it to 100K. The question is like, what type of content were you making at 13, 14 years old?
So it was just like really random, what I thought was funny skits. So it'd just be like stuff that I thought was relatable to other people my age and stuff that I thought would go on the For You page, which is like the trending page on Vine. And so I would just try to make funny videos, nothing fitness related, like what I do now. It was literally just something that I had fun doing, like a passion for it. And just because I always wanted to be an actor growing up too. Just something on film video, but I was always too afraid to actually go to a studio and do it. So I guess, yeah. So I guess Vine was like my way of starting, getting into that whole style of industry.
All right, so that's cool. Yeah, that kind of explains the YouTube. But I actually want to stay a little bit with the mystery of Brandon William, because Brandon William.
When you joined this call.
Is that your real name?
So the first part of it, Brandon is.
Hey, Brandon is.
So Brandon is. And then William is my middle name.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, and that's why a lot of people say Williams instead of William, just because that's how it should be. It's my middle name.
Yeah.
But my real last name is Kalal, the one that you found.
Which,
online.
Yeah,
well, we found it here.
We found it here.
On Zoom.
You joined the Zoom.
Oh, you found it here?
Yeah. It shows here.
Oh, you joined the Zoom call. Yeah. It says Brandon Kalal. And I was like, what? Guy keeps blowing my mind. Who the fuck is this guy?
So one of the things that I quickly could find, because you joined like just prior to this podcast. So you played volleyball at a pretty high level.
You did.
Is that, yeah, apparently he did. So tell us a bit about that as well. Like, what's your background in sports in general?
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say it was like super high level. Like, we were in like, I think, second division, first division in high school. And so I played indoor and also beach volleyball pretty much all 4 years of high school. And but before that, I was doing martial arts, karate, tangsudo, taekwondo for about probably 8 years or so. So I had that as my like sports background, and then I got into volleyball, and I honestly wouldn't have gotten into any of sports if my friends didn't push me to do it, because once again, I was sort of afraid to join any sport because I just didn't know what I was doing, and I don't know, I guess I was afraid of the judgment of learning a new sport. So I got pushed into volleyball. I absolutely loved it, and I just kept playing, and that's how I just started kind of even with fitness as well. Because you have to get stronger for volleyball, and I was super skinny and weak when I first started. So,
So does that mean how tall are you?
I'm not tall at all. I'm 5'10". I can just jump high.
In terms of your fitness journey or your workout journey, where did it really start? Was that the volleyball part? What age were you there?
I ooh, I think I was somewhere around 15. 14, 15 is when I first started just into sports or fitness in general. I first started actually going to like a gym, just like weight training. And I had no clue what I was doing. I was just lifting random machines, thinking I was doing something. And then I also got into calisthenics around the same time. And I was inspired by a few people. Chris Harria is one of them. And these guys have, or had beef, but Austin Dunham too.
Yes.
I watched his like tutorial videos a while back. And even Abnormal Beings.
Oh, nice.
I remember watching his videos a while back and I'm thinking like, damn, like how the hell does he do all these muscle-ups, pull-ups, all this crazy stuff.
And then you went to later collabing with Chris Harria. That's a fun bridge to that. But like you just had your journey starting with not really knowing what to do and then going into calisthenics. All right.
Exactly. And I also wanted to take the cheap route to fitness and not pay for a gym membership. Because that literally for the first 4 years of working out and in high school, I would just sneak into gyms, like hotel gyms, random whatever kind of gym I can get into, I just sneak in. I could afford it, but like, I don't know. If I ever felt like lifting weights, I would just sneak into a gym. But usually it was just calisthenics.
Yeah.
Cool. So basically the volleyball, calisthenics, gym, it's also something that you still see that in your current video. So you do a lot of 30 days training as a boxer, 30 days training as something else. I do wonder, do you feel that, because if I think, so I go to the gym mostly more than I do calisthenics, and you just have sort of a plan for 8 to 12 weeks, you know, you have all these, you know, progressive overload you try to achieve in order to get sort of results. How would you say that's for you? Because you train completely different almost every month, it seems like.
It's tough, because all these different training styles, they're all very different. Like boxing was very high cardio, very high rep, low weight, whereas something like bulking for 90 days, 30 days, I was trying to get stronger and I was going lower rep, heavier weight. So I honestly train just however I train for that month, right? Yeah. It actually changes, because I'm going to do gymnastics for 90 days. So that's going to be a lot of ring work, way less weights. And I'm also going to do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. That's my next one. So that's also going to be completely different.
So back to your roots, sort of.
Correct. Cool. Yeah, basically. So my training style is a mix, but I would say usually it's a combination of the three compound movements in weight training and then calisthenics, pull-ups, push-ups, dips is what I aim for. And usually the 8 to 12 rep range, 4 sets for hypertrophy. So that's generally my training. And then outside of that, it's whatever I'm doing for 30 days. So whether that be Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, boxing, et cetera.
Ah, so that has to be sort of like, I do it as well for a few times, but a few times a year types of videos, but not even like fully a training. Like I do think you do them very well and in a very unique way. I do think like training like or eating like this guy for 24 hours is a bit overdone on YouTube. So that's why I don't do it. But it must be hard for you to like tracking progress on itself, because one day you're trying to like gain weight and one day you're trying to be as light as possible because you got to hang in the rings. Like that's,
oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. I ran into that issue when doing boxing and bulking, because bulking, you have to eat a lot.
Yeah.
And I want to get bigger, but boxing is so high cardio. I'm like dripping sweat by the end of it that I burn so many calories from that. And I also can't weight train because I'm so tired after doing all that boxing.
But were you doing it at the same time?
Correct. Yeah.
Oh, at the same time? 1 month. What?
Yeah.
How does that work? Yeah.
Oh, you wanted, man.
So what happened was like bulking started for 90 days. And then I would say the last 3 weeks of bulking, I started boxing. And so it got into the way a little bit of my bulking, video. But I still tried to mix it in, with whatever energy and time that I had, because that's just kind of the hustle on YouTube. You gotta be constantly making videos, and so sometimes they will have to clash, just like boxing and bulking did for me.
Yeah. I mean, I would probably never go that route in terms of.
You do project at the same time, but this sort of clashes, right?
I do, yeah. I do produce at the same time a lot, but it has to do more like with completely different challenges. So it has to be like a 90-day body transformation, and then at the same time you're doing, like something completely different. Like it's different projects, but videos that maybe take like a day or 2 days or a week to record and not necessarily. Yeah. But I mean, it's interesting. Didn't know that and didn't expect that actually to be a choice to be like, all right, you know, fuck it, let's do it like during. Yeah.
Yeah. So the reason why I was able to do it specifically with this is because boxing is more skill. My focus wasn't a before and after for boxing.
Oh, okay.
It was more so how good can I get? That's why I never mesh it like that if it's like a body transformation, because obviously that wouldn't make sense.
Yeah.
But boxing, my focus was how good can I get with this skill? And then the bulking is the actual body transformation one.
True.
Just to clear that up.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
That really makes me wonder, like, how do you structure your days? Because if you have these challenges, I think that will influence the structure of your day quite a bit.
All right, so yeah, what does a day in the life of Brandon Kalal look like?
Oh, wow. So it varies. There is no like one specific thing I do. I wake up, brush my teeth. Something I've been doing recently is going on a quick 5 minute walk, 5-10 minute walk outside.
Very good.
I just find for me, it helps clear my head, helps get the body flowing, moving. And it kind of sets me on pace for the day.
Starts the production of testosterone in more early morning, better for gains, natural light.
There we go. Yeah. There we go.
There we go.
I just learned that right now.
Yeah.
So I would do that, eat breakfast, like 4 eggs usually, some toast and avocado. And then I get my day started, whether it's just work, just edit a video, record, pretty much till the end of the day. And then in between, I'll take like maybe a few breaks here and there just to watch some YouTube. But my whole life is literally just like wake up, eat, work out and work, and then go to sleep. And that's pretty much every single day.
Yeah.
This sounds familiar.
Yeah, it's basically
that's
the
basically
same.
You too,
yeah,
huh?
It's basically the same. So yeah, it can be all over the place, but
7 days a week?
But pretty much, yeah. But I will say, and a lot of people, especially like in my family or friends, they don't understand that, that like with YouTube, it's just constant work and they want me to take time off and hang out. And I do. But it can't be as free as I can be. I generally try to stay focused on track because this is my ultimate goal to keep growing the channel.
Yeah, that's it's also good to take a break, but
oh yeah, definitely.
I never take one. I always say that, but I never take one.
I remember.
Oh.
So go ahead.
Sorry, I just remembered. But I do, when I say I work all day, it's not exactly the truth because there is a lot of downtime where I procrastinate. So yeah, I get off task, off focus pretty easily just because I look at analytics, I look at random stuff on my phone. But generally, I try my best to stay focused the entire day and just work.
All right.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean I'm constantly going.
True. Yeah. I was just laughing because of something Stan said, reminded me. So one of the things I always try to tell people is that balance is important and sort of have routines and all those things. And then, you know, at some point, Stan sent me a message, voice note at like 7 p.m. I started taking evenings off. We're like at a nice walk now. I'm going to do this more often. I'm together with my girlfriend. This is really nice. I feel so much more energetic. And I'd ask him great. How often have you been doing that since that night?
Yeah, that was the answer.
That was the one night.
Since that night.
Oh, my God.
That one day. And I was like, I should do this more often. Yeah. So, well, we're sitting here in the evening.
But that's YouTube life, I guess.
It's part of the, YouTube life, I would call it. And I mean, it's in the end, most of the time it's worth it, I guess. How are you? Oh, yeah. How are you doing?
Oh, it's very worth it.
Yeah.
I'm very happy with where I'm at. Other people find it interesting as well. Because very few people, as many influencers as you think there are out there, you don't see very many of them actually in person. And you find that out really quickly when you start to record in public. Because people constantly walk up to you and just ask you, like, yo, what are you recording? Who are you? And it just makes people's days sometimes, like seeing you record doing random stuff. Because they don't see it. Usually it's just a boring every day you're walking to the store doing this, and then I'm just like randomly screaming at a camera in the middle of the street. Like it just, you know, it kind of throws people off, but it makes their day a little bit more interesting and more entertaining. It's fun though. I really enjoy YouTube and it's very worth it. Absolutely.
Nice.
And I learn a lot doing YouTube, and it's made me grow as a person quite a lot.
Yeah, 100%. Actually, before we go to like your YouTube journey itself, let's go a little back. Like, where are you? Where did your life start, and how did you become the man you are today?
I was born in Chicago, Illinois. So in the United States. I know I talk about being Lithuanian outside of...
Exactly. You know, that's what I, why I asked this question.
And now also the last name makes more sense than William.
Yeah, William. Yeah. So this is also why I asked the question, because again, going back to the mystery around Brendan William or Brendan Kalal. Is that the right pronunciation?
Kalal.
Yeah, Kalal. Okay. Yeah. There you go. So, I mean, the sort of mystery behind that is that when you search on your name, you do get like, oh, he's Lithuanian as well. So how do you live in the US? And I mean, you sound like a native US speaker. So like that, there's a lot of obviously questions, but all right. Yeah. So you are born in the US.
Oh yeah. So born in the US, my mom's side is Lithuanian. My dad's side is American.
All right.
And so, but every single summer as a kid growing up, I would go to Lithuania and, I would go for my school summer break. So it'd be like 2-3 months. And so I live with my grandma on her farm, experience the culture, hang out with my family, learn the language, and then I'd go back to the US to American school. And that would be my process every single summer. But I stopped that at around like 12 years old, just because expenses, it's really expensive to fly every single summer. It's like over $1,000. And then also just school, you know, in time in my personal life, like I couldn't just go every single summer anymore. So, but that's the whole Lithuanian thing. I just have family in Lithuania, and that's how I am half American, half Lithuanian. And that's how I grew up too.
Oh, cool. All right.
And then so early starting with Vine, which then grew into. So did that immediately lead up to your YouTube?
Or yeah, there was a big wave of Viners actually taking over YouTube. But that was around the 2000, well, I think it might have been 2016, 17 part, where like lots of Viners took over, and they're still insanely big. Like you've got Lele Pons, you've got Cody Ko, obviously. You've got Daniel Gonzalez. You got a lot of big Viners who took over YouTube. Did you use that following as well, or did it came later? Did it come later?
So my following was not nearly strong enough or big enough to be able to transfer. If I were to try, I probably would have gotten a few hundred subscribers maybe. So for me, the YouTube was something I did on and off as I did Vine. I'd post for 3-6 months, burn out, stop for like a half a year, then I'd start again. So if you look back on my channel, you'll see like massive time gaps in when I posted videos.
Like burnout?
You just see me like burn out, yeah. So the biggest issue for me when I was first starting with YouTube is I would never take it seriously and fully commit. I wouldn't invest in myself. And so I would literally be using like a light bulb and a broken tripod, really crappy camera. And I wouldn't have an external hard drive or anything, just like 60 gigabytes on my computer. So when it came to editing, it took me forever because I would have to keep constantly delete clips. And I could only make like 5-minute videos or so, because that's the only storage I had. And so my issue was I wouldn't invest myself to make the process of recording easier. And as a result of that, I spent countless extra hours trying to make it happen, and I would just burn out. I'm like, bro, like I can't keep doing this, because I'd be up at like 5 a.m. every night trying to get this video done. And I couldn't, because I didn't have the extra space. And so burnout is very... real, and it can happen if you don't invest in yourself and you don't commit. But what saved me is my actual passion to do video and YouTube. Even if I burnt out, I would be back 6 months later, just naturally. I don't know what it would be. I would just have this feeling to start and keep doing it, and I just kept doing it. And it took me probably like 5 or 6 times of burning out to realize this is the reason I'm not investing in myself. I have to get actual equipment. So I bought a ring light. I bought a new tripod, got a nicer camera, and I went from there. Oh, and I got an external hard drive. That was 1 terabyte.
I think that's sort of in there. That's really good advice for a lot of people, because a lot of people, they, even in business, right, they start making money and they just put it on the bank account, or they don't want to invest in themselves. And then later they're going to complain like, oh, I'm not growing. My business isn't growing, or my YouTube isn't growing. It's all about investing back and understanding that it's not you know, you're not there for a super quick win, especially on YouTube. Like, it's not a quick win, right? You have to invest. You have to have the longevity, basically.
And I will say it's, even if you're not making money, if you're going to take it seriously, you have to invest your own money that you've made from your other job or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever work you do.
I mean,
because I didn't have any money when I just, whatever money I made, I put it into the.
The sick thing nowadays is that if you have a phone, this is gonna get you basically as far as you can dream, because there's still big YouTubers just doing phone, just iPhone videos, think, and they're quite big. So it just, if you have the right video idea, you can get very big. No, it's back in the day, definitely. If you're talking about like a few years ago, even just a few years ago, but when I started like 10 years ago, 8 years ago, then the cameras on your phone wouldn't be sufficient, and then you just have to get a camcorder, you just have to get a DSLR, which is like a big investment, like $300-$400 for someone that just like has no money, is 14 years old, obviously.
And I will say I got very lucky, because I started with the Canon T3i.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you saw this whole entrepreneurship series I did on my channel, but I met a lot of entrepreneurs. I interviewed 30 millionaires.
Oh, yes. And one of these, I've seen that.
Right. So, and one of those millionaires I interviewed, close friend of mine, his name's Phil, and he actually gifted me a whole DSLR, a Canon T6i, with a nice wide-angle lens, and he also gifted me a drone, a DJI Mini Mavic drone. And I genuinely think, like, without that extra equipment, I don't know if my channel would be where it's at today.
What? Just 'cause, why did he do that?
Why did he do that? I don't know. I think he saw my vision. He saw that I'm kind of motivated, and he was just kind enough to gift it.
Who was his name? What was his name?
His name's Phil.
All right.
I mean, I do think, speaking from experience, from knowing people like that and also having helped some
people.
They
want to help people.
Yeah. And basically, so if I think back at my journey, part of it was me having sort of a mentor, someone who helped me. And rather than wanting money in return, he said return a favor to someone else. So that's why with Iman Gaji was the first person I helped, who is an entrepreneur, also not because I wanted money, but hey, I had to pass it on, and now he's helping people. So I think that's sort of a, especially with like business side, that's pretty normal. But gifting this much though isn't always normal.
I mean, he's very successful, and I guess we're kind of like good friends now, because he in a way is sort of like a mentor to me. And so he really does like what I do. His kids watch my videos now too.
That's cool.
But first he gifted me the Canon T6i, and then down the line, way down the line, after I was still recording more videos, getting bigger, then, he mentioned he's giving away his drone. So I was like, okay, yeah, I'll be more than happy to take it.
if you insist, so, you know. cool.
So, and I say that 'cause, you know, I didn't know what camera to buy, what camera to upgrade to. I was kind of still afraid to invest because this was beginning of 2020 when the pandemic was happening, and which is actually when my channel started to blow up and grow from 30-day videos. But without the help, I don't think my channel would be where it's at today.
That is basically where YouTube journey started. What about now? Well, your vision is very clear, at least to me. You want to grow on YouTube, and you're doing a decent job at it right now. What is your strategy towards YouTube? How are you viewing YouTube right now? You're doing YouTube full-time right now, just to get that out. Yes, exactly, because that's the entire day.
Yeah.
But your YouTube journey, how are you looking at it right now, and how'd you grow?
The way I go about it is just posting consistently once a week. I go for novelty and quick storytelling style videos where I have a strong why in every single video, and I try to open up a bunch of loops in the intro and close those loops throughout the video for people's curiosity. So, and then the novelty is especially important. You'll notice in the beginning of every single video I'm usually in some random location, and that is just so I'm not in my room introing every single time. I got really bored of that. So I always like to be somewhere random, something that catches people's attention. And I use the drone a lot to show the entire view. I'll pop something up behind me. So my strategy is catch attention, open up curiosity loops, as many as possible in the intro, close them throughout the video to keep people watching. And now I'm starting to play around with the packaging, which is the thumbnail and the title. Trying to work on improving that as much as possible, just testing different things. And I've seen you do the same too, where you're changing your thumbnails and titles. We all do it.
Yeah, 100%, yes.
I have a question about that because we had several YouTubers here. So when do you decide on the title and the thumbnail in the process?
Oh, okay. So I mean, the ideal answer is first. I always do it before a video. That's okay. The ideal answer.
Yeah.
But most of the time, I have a very general, rough idea of what it's going to be. And then I shoot the video and I'm like, okay, what's the actual title and thumbnail going to be?
Yeah, but that's the same as what you have, basically.
Yeah, basically.
You try and think of it, but it will change 99% of the time.
90% of the time it changes, or at least a lot of stuff changes. But yeah, I do have a very clear idea, or at least multiple options that I know when it's going to work. Like maybe it doesn't work, because when something is uploaded on YouTube, it gives a different feel. So you only know once it's on YouTube. It's something weird that's going on mentally.
That's right.
If you see your video in, I don't know, the homepage, or you see it on somewhere else, and then you're like, wait, it doesn't look that good now, and I need to change this, or it needs to be brighter, then that's the way why I would change some certain stuff, or when it's not performing. Because to tie into that question, when would you change it in terms of when do you think it's performing bad? Is it when your views are not as like it's a 10 out of 10, like worst performing video, or it's a 5 out of 10, or it's because the click-through rate is like, I don't know, less than 6%, 5%, 8%?
Usually I give it a couple days. I try to, unless it literally just tanks and like really underperforms, which hasn't really happened before, but... usually I give it a few days and I see the view analytics just kind of die off.
Yeah.
And it's just, because usually if a video is going to do well, it's going to keep some sort of up pace, like 1,000 views an hour, something like that. And it should keep that pace and it should actually start doing increments like that. But if I see it just completely slope down and that's it, dies off, then I think about changing the title and thumbnail.
Yeah.
And something I did with my Bugatti video, the golden Bugatti video,
I saw that
video... Yeah, it performed very bad first time I posted it, 10 out of 10. And then I changed the title, changed the thumbnail, and a couple of weeks later, it's at 1.8 million views. So it's very powerful if you change the title and thumbnail.
Let me see if I remember. Let me see. The title right now is Do One Push-Up, Drive 1 Second in World's Most Expensive Car. Was the first one was Every Push-Up is 1 Second in the Most Expensive Car. Yes. Okay, so you changed the title. Yeah. Thumbnail was also different, right?
Thumbnail was I think the only difference with thumbnails, I added a price tag and I took out text.
Yes, that was it. Okay.
The funny thing is, what you said, what the old title was, is something that I see you do a lot. Like one push-up is, right? Or one
equals. It differs, yes.
So it's always funny how, you know, it makes a lot of sense why you came up with that title, because you see other videos perform well, and then for some reason it just doesn't on your video, right?
It's, that's a very interesting one,
That's sort of, but yeah, do you have an explanation 100%. For that, or is it just YouTube being YouTube?
What works for one channel isn't going to work for another one. And I definitely like to test around and play with that. So like Brownie, your titles are very different. It's like if I were to do that same title and we've seen right now, it doesn't perform well on my channel. But it does perform very well on your channel. So I think there is something about different YouTube channels and probably just your audience and how they're conditioned to view your videos. Like if they know a title is a Brownie title, if they know a title is a Brandon William title, they're more likely to click on it. But if you do a title that's something that you normally don't do, then I think click-through rate could suffer.
So
that might be my explanation for that.
I agree. At the same time, I think about this cheesy quote, which is, you know, if you do what you always did, you get what you always got, right? So if you always do like a Brendan title or always a Brownie title, then it's very maybe good for your existing audience, but your goal is not to keep the same audience. Your goal is to grow. So stepping out of that box, in my mind, but keep in mind, out of the three of us, I'm by far the person with the least amount of knowledge on YouTube. To me, that would make more sense.
Yes. That is 100% true. And in YouTube terms, it is a little bit less true because, I mean, if your titles work, they should work. Also, for a bigger audience.
If your audience watches, then of course it's going to be pushed to more other people as well.
But it does work the other way around as well, because if my title works, then my titles should work for you. Like if my titles work like for viral videos, mm-hmm. they should work for you in the long run as well. So maybe your video is a 10 out of 10 in the first day, but maybe in the first month, it's a 1 out of 10 because of the title. But hey, that's all just in hindsight and all just wait, maybe. So you yeah, like maybe your video would have gotten 10 million views now instead of 1.8, which like pretty sick already. But hey, yeah. you get it. Like, no. I think you did the right choice changing the title in this case. But
so yeah. Lesson of the day, use Browdy titles and your videos will go viral.
Definitely not. Exactly. I mean, there's a lot of stuff. The thing is, YouTube is a very fast and crazy platform where you one time you can have a very good title and if you upload the same video, same title, same thumbnail, same length, a year later, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Or a month later.
Yeah. Or a month later or a day later.
So let's get back to your story. So that's how YouTube started. That's basically what you're trying to do right now to grow. What's the goal? Like, what's the vision? Where do you want to go when it comes to YouTube and the business around it?
So what I have in, it's hard to say because it's not like I have this ultimate goal of like, I want to be at this exact position. Like, all I know for sure is I want to grow the channel to over a million subscribers and beyond. And I just want to continue to entertain and potentially branch into different businesses relating to YouTube or not relating to YouTube as well. Because the thing about YouTube is it brings up a lot of different business opportunities along the way. And you learn a lot of things like just editing and if you learn editing from YouTube, you can apply that to marketing. And I've been getting to Facebook ads right now, kind of playing around with that, trying to learn it. So my ultimate goal is just to continue doing YouTube, get better, talent stack, just keep stacking skills on top of each other, and then just become as good of an entrepreneur, businessman, entertainer that I can. This is my goal.
Yes. All right. So the answer, which is actually a very common answer and very in the creative space especially, is you'll see what pops up. You'll see what happens. And then,
legit.
Yeah, basically.
You never know.
No, exactly. Which
is really funny because we had, so last week we had Marijn on the podcast, which is a big fitness influencer from Holland, which you may know as well. And he was very much like, I have such a clear vision and I really believe in the law of attraction. And because I know this is where I want to go to, I know that I'll do whatever it takes to make that. So he's more from, I would say more, it sounds worse than, but more like an entrepreneur mindset, while you're maybe more of a creative mindset, like being in this creative sphere just will, you know, I'm going to keep evolving and keep improving my skills, which is great.
Yeah.
That's
a different
true.
Way of looking at things, I think.
But he does have the same sort of way of looking at it in terms of a million subscribers.
Oh yeah,
and
the one isn't better than the other.
Oh no, definitely not. But I think it's a good distinction because I feel like, and I think Marijn would agree, like more business businessman, more of an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Whereas lots of people on YouTube that are very big are more creators and are very, some are very bad at the business stuff and some are also pretty good at the business stuff. So
I suck at it, if I'm gonna be honest. Like, monetizing is always the worst part for me. Like I can make videios, but monetizing,
let's jump into that then. So we saw a video of yours and where you basically gave away $10,000. Now, looking at your views and the RPM that you will probably be getting, I don't think that video made you 10K. So
no.
You must have other streams of revenue.
No, okay.
I mean, hey, maybe in a month if it blows up a little bit more, but
change it to a Browdy title.
But, no. So simply put, you did a video where you say first to lift 100,000 pounds gets $10,000. And the smart part was you was in there as well. You were in there as well, and you could win the $10,000 as well. Unfortunately, you didn't win, and spoilers, but you you didn't win, and you lost the 10K, basically. Sucks, but if the video goes viral, first of all, for me, that would be, the video would have probably 2.5 million views to go over 10K. So, I mean, it has to do a decent amount of views.
So that's why sort of like monetization, the bridge, show how, you know, what other revenue streams.
Yeah.
Do you have?
Why do you spend? Yeah. I mean, why you spend 10K makes sense because you want to invest into the channel and make sure you get those popping titles. But how are you actually able to spend 10K and lose it like that?
So should I go over income sources?
Yes.
Yep.
Maybe that. Okay. So there's YouTube AdSense. That's just general.
Yep.
And then there's the one-off integration sponsors, which I had for that video. There's Transparent Labs, which is a separate because I have them sponsor me and also affiliate sales that I get from them. Workout programs. I just have one, but I'm working on a second one right now. And then I have the whole YouTube consulting slash marketing thing. And then merchandise. And then investments a little bit, crypto, stocks, and that's it.
So you do have YouTube consulting as well.
So it's more so with local businesses. So I'll help them with their content. I'll create video ideas for them. I'll have 1 hour meetings with them 4 times a month. And so I help brainstorm with them, create their ideas, and then either they record it themselves, right? I have someone go record for them, and then we take care of the editing, and then we just post on their channels or social medias, and we basically create content for them. And I help them brainstorm.
What part of the pie is that? What part of the revenue stream is that? What does that bring in, basically?
Like percentage-wise?
It's nothing crazy. It's just maybe an extra few thousand a month, but I would say, you know, like 20 to 25% of the revenues.
Okay.
And this is really just money that is pretty easy. Like, I could scale this if I wanted to, but I really want to focus on YouTube. And so it's just extra money that I don't necessarily need that I can just put into my videos.
Nice.
So.
Yeah. I mean, it's a done for you service basically, especially if you do the, everything for them, right? How much time do would you say you spend on it a month? Like on that business?
I would say somewhere around maybe 10 hours.
Okay.
Nothing crazy.
That's decent.
Yeah, because I was just looking at the opportunity cost. If you would have said like 10 hours a week, right, the opportunity cost might be putting out an extra video a month, right? So instead of doing this, but it's like 2 hours a week.
No, that's not a lot.
Then that's fine, of course, because there's so many hours you have anyway. So
it would be worse if I didn't have like someone to edit and to outsource to. And I don't have that for my own videos, which I need to get an editor, but it's very tough for our style of videos.
Hey, someone who finally gets me.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you have a younger brother? Do you have a younger brother? Because that's the solution Stan basically found.
Sort of. Yeah. Still a lot of editing done by myself.
Yeah, of course.
So I was going to say the reason why it's so difficult to get an editor is because I literally do not know how the video is going to turn out until I sit down and edit. I don't like literally out like maybe when there's 4 hours left of editing, that's when I know how the video is going to come together. I'll like voiceover, put in random voiceovers here and there. I forgot to record a clip. I got to go back and record it. Wherever. And so it's just like, it's so hard to outsource that to someone because I need to have a really strict outline to give to them if they're going to do it.
Exactly. I want to say so much, like, obviously, because if you have, if you say to someone, can you create a video out of this? They will send you a video back, but they will not say, wait, maybe you should record this, or maybe this is missing, or this. They have no clue. Also, people, they are very talented, very good at editing, very good at recording, very cinematic, but that's wrong. That's not YouTube. That video will not go viral because it's too cinematic. So there's a big difference there. And also, you say 4 hours, the last 4 hours. How much percentage of that is from the entire video? Because I can imagine looking at your videos, quite similar to my videos. What is like the 4 hours? What percentage is that? How long do you take for a video?
So for a video, if it's like a 30-day, 90-day, it might take me like 12 to 15, 18 hours of just editing.
That's fast. You should.
That's fast.
Did you see Stan's face just now?
I thought you were gonna say that's a lot
for the entire video.
Okay, well that's like me actually sitting down and editing. There's probably if you're talking about like actually recording.
I'm talking about editing.
Oh, just editing. Then I would say 18 hours at most for just sitting down and editing.
What?
But that's like. So are you saying you edit longer?
Way longer.
How long?
I had it for days. Like, I already have what is it? I probably have 18 hours of footage.
So, that's a lot. Of
footage. Not 18 hours, but it takes my brother like 15 hours to go through all the footage, and gets all the everything imported into the projects and just cutting out all the bullshit. Like,
So here's how my process goes. I take all the footage, put in the timeline, cut out all the dead space, leave the takes that I like, and then I get into the, I like write an outline separately of voiceovers and how I want the storyline to go. And then I start putting in the effects and doing all the creative work. And that's the part that takes a lot of time, is the cutting out the dead space, maybe like 5 to 10 hours. And then the actual creative part is after that, another 8 hours or so. But I do edit over the course of a few days. It's not like I'm just 18 hours straight.
Of course. Of course.
When I look at it, when I look at the hours, I'm thinking like when I'm actually on the computer in Final Cut Pro editing, like 18 hours.
So yeah, so not the voiceover, not the creative stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Outside of that, like my mind is constantly going when it comes to YouTube, like constantly what this video is going to look like. This shot, how's this shot going to look? You know, stuff like that.
Yeah, okay. So then you're looking more like an entire week working on a video.
Yeah. So I try to get a video out every week. And now because my videos have been getting a little bit more complex, it's been taking me like a week and a half to post a video. Because I'll take like hours just to work on the thumbnail. Even hours to work on the title. And I often have to, I have a group chat with all my camera guys, like, yo, what's this like? Do you like this thumbnail? Do you like this title? And they give me feedback, and I just keep making changes until it's what I like.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Would you say you're a perfectionist?
I don't think so. I think it's good to have some imperfection
definitely.
In YouTube.
Then that's a definitely. Very good thing
but,
to have.
But yeah, the reason why I asked is because of a lot of things you sort of said during this podcast so far. So you started with, if people wouldn't have pushed me to do sports because I'm afraid that people might, or I'm not good enough, or, you know, those kind of things. And now, like, about the thumbnail. So it sort of started, you know, it's sort of a recurring pattern. Like, so it was just a question sort of out of curiosity. But
maybe I am to a certain extent. Like, I won't stop editing until I like something. I'm usually up. I mean, you understand the same. Like, I'm usually up to like 6, 7 a.m., 6 a.m. sometimes.
That's not good.
Yeah, it's not good. But it's like, I need to get this video out the next day, yeah. So I have to stay up.
But why do you have to get it out next day? I always find an interesting question. I could answer the question myself, but why do you need to get it out the next day?
I just feel like it's been too long since I posted a video. And usually I get distracted pretty easily. So I'm very focused at night. So usually it's best for me to edit at night because I keep focused the whole time. In the morning, it doesn't really work out as well. But for me, I get most of my work done in the late 1 a.m., 2 a.m., 3 a.m., super focused. That's why I feel like I end up getting the video out the next day because I just stay focused the whole time and I get the video done. So that's
just
how it happens.
Just out of curiosity, are you more creative in the morning?
Nighttime, 100%.
Also nighttime. Morning, so both more focused and more creative in the night.
Yeah, I struggle so much in the morning to stay on task, to do anything, really.
Fun fact, it's like 8 a.m., 9 a.m. now for Brendan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At the moment.
Legit, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's why.
So that's why. No, I have to say, you're quite energetic right now.
So did you actually have to get up earlier than normal to be on this podcast with us?
I woke up at 7:30, so 30 minutes before
okay.
30 minutes before. So I brushed my teeth, did whatever I got to do. I haven't ate or anything. I just podcast. Let's get it.
What time do you normally get up?
I would say it's been closer to like, ideally I'd want to get up by like 8:30, but it's been closer to like 9:30.
You are definitely like evening person.
Yeah, you're an evening person. There's nothing wrong with that.
No,
right?
No, definitely
there's nothing
not.
Wrong with that. 100%. It's very important to actually know. Because especially in the entrepreneur world, if you've seen those videos, people always say, oh, get up at 5, you know, you should hustle when others sleep. Yeah, if it doesn't work for you, sleep.
Nice.
Right? Cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you guys morning person
people?
I am. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I think I do like a good morning routine, but I would say that I am very productive or very creative at night as well evening. So I would... make a distinction between that creative part, definitely at night, like lots of things pop up as well. But I can be very productive in the morning as well.
That's the definition of a morning person. So normally a morning person, and we've discussed in the podcast, I won't go over all the brain like shit, is that if you're a morning person, you're productive in the morning and you're very creative in the evening. If you're an evening person, you're often creative in the morning. That's why I asked it. But you're very productive and focused in the evening. But of course, that's in general. And sometimes people have a mix. So you're just creative and productive in the evening. So
what I think it is the cell phone, social media.
Fucks it
There's
up.
There's a lot of, It definitely gets into the way for being productive in the morning. And like, I can try to be productive, but normally it doesn't work out. Like a YouTube video will pop up. I'm like, it's a solid video.
Gotta watch it, man.
gotta watch it. Or I'll make the excuse like, I'm going to learn something from this. I'm going to pick up a new editing trick, so, you know, something like that, which sometimes I do, but most of the time it's just entertainment.
YouTube, like, where did it start to pop off for you? And let's also make a bridge to, well, at least when I said your name, someone I know said, wait, is that the guy like who did a video with Chris Heria? How did that happen with Chris Heria? So,
Okay. So my whole YouTube, like, actual growth started at the beginning of 2020, COVID shutting everything down. And total mistake. Like, I'm just doing my thing, having fun, making random videos about entertainment, finance, and then I got into fitness. So I saw Tyler Oliveira, I think that's his last name. Oliveira. He made a One Punch Man video for 30 days. It's like, okay, like, I could do that. I want to see what kind of results I get. So I made a whole video. And I posted that, and that was the first video to take off. 1.8 million views, somewhere there. I was like, oh, dang. Like, I can actually start doing this sort of full time. Because at the time, I quit my job working at a gelato shop that I was working there for like 4 years. And I quit because I had to move, not because of YouTube. And I moved like 40 minutes away. But it just so happened that YouTube took off and I got monetized at the same time. It's like, okay, like, I'm just going to try this and make it work.
So you weren't monetized up until that point?
Up until One Punch Man took
2020,
off.
2020, damn.
Yeah, so it took YouTube like 2 months to approve me for monetization. It was very weird. I had to tweet them on Twitter to get monetized. So
that's the monetization process in like 2019, 2020. That was fucked. I mean, I think it's still fucked up, but I think,
like, use a different social media platform to reach out to a social media platform. Right,
that's so
use Twitter to YouTube. Yeah,
probably same would work for Facebook and Instagram, because there's no way they'll respond to you on Facebook or Instagram.
It's so crazy.
Yeah.
So I started getting monetized. Right, I was maybe making like a couple hundred a month. I had savings for my job, so I was like, okay, I'm just gonna keep going with this. And my mom family was telling me like, yo, get a job, like, don't do this. I was like, no, trust me, I got this.
Trust me.
So I stayed consistent. I kept posting. I was like, okay, these 30-day videos are doing pretty well. It did well this time. What if I do one with Chris Heria?
That's why those started, the 30 days. All right, makes sense. One of your first viral videos, that makes sense, that then you see the consistent, like, it coming back so often, and you actually want to get them out as often as possible. Also, even to a certain extent where you combine the recordings.
So I noticed with YouTube, once a video takes off in a certain niche, usually you're kind of stuck in that niche. Because you have now an existing audience in fitness. So a fitness video took off for me. When I posted any kind of entertainment video, it would do very bad, maybe a couple thousand views. But as soon as I posted something fitness, learning a muscle up, some sort of skill, several hundred thousands of views. I was like, okay, we're going to stick with fitness. Because my initial strategy was create content that I love and enjoy, and whatever takes off, takes off. And so I continued doing, just workout videos. And so I enjoyed calisthenics. I was like, why don't I do a calisthenics one? But, you know, who am I going to train like? And Chris Heria popped up right away. I was like, okay, I'm going to do Chris Heria. And so I created this video, training like him for 30 days. You know, I posted up on the channel. And before this, I did make calisthenic videos. I think I learned the muscle up before this video. Some calisthenics.
I think that's
videos.
The first video
well.
I've ever seen of you, because it got recommended to me because I was watching Stan's video and some other calisthenics.
Is that the
people.
One with your face in the thumbnail, super red?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
That's the Chris Heria thumbnail. I do a lot of red face.
Yes,
I do a lot of red face thumbnails. So, but anyway, I trained like Chris Heria, created the video. I think like in the first 2 weeks, I noticed it was like had decent views. I was like, okay, this could take off. And then, like, 4 weeks in, a month, like, it just completely took off. Like, several hundreds of thousands of views, and right now it's at 4.8 million views total.
Sick.
And I didn't expect nothing from this. And this is kind of going back to how you don't know as a creator, like things pop up, opportunities pop up. And so Chris eventually saw the video and he commented, he's like, yo, great video. DM me. I want to send you some Heria gear. I appreciate you doing this. And so I DM'd him. We talked a little bit and then he sent me gear. I was like, okay, well, if this video blew up, I'm also going to make a video about unboxing gear from Chris Heria. Sure enough, that video got almost 1 million views, 800,000. And so we just kind of connected, and that's how I kind of met Chris in a way, is just through creating this 30-day video, caught his attention, and we became friends in a way from that.
That's honestly such a cool like tip in there as well for so many people. Because so many people want to reach out to someone or want to probably randomly send you guys like stupid messages. Yeah. You want to grab their attention, and you're not going to grab your attention or your attention or Chris's attention by sending, hey, or hey, how are you doing?
Yeah.
Or how
do you shout out?
Yeah. Give you like, yeah. Oh so my God, what yeah. you say, provide value, either provide value or, well, this was providing value because you were getting a lot of traction to a video which probably drew people to him as well. I mean, provide value, get their attention.
100%. My ultimate goal, I wanted to collaborate more with Chris, and he doesn't have to give a crap about me. I'm just some random guy that has a few thousand subs. But I was like, okay, how can I collaborate more with him? I was like, these videos are doing well, so why don't we do some more weight vest stuff? And so I did a bunch of weight vest giveaways with him. I did as many pushes as I can in an hour, gave away one weight vest for every 100, right? So for him, it's marketing and just basically just marketing.
Yep.
And for me, I get content. I get to create a video. And also I have the connection with Chris now. So... That's what you said, like provide value for someone you want to get in touch with. And you have to provide more value than you're going to get in return. That's always my goal.
I have a really funny sidestep here. Stan, do you remember how we first spoke?
Yes.
So basically I was living half in London, half over here in Holland. And I was following Stan and he had a story like, does anyone know a photographer in London? And a friend of mine, well, I actually knew several friends of mine who were photographers. So I provided value, connected him with cool guys so they could create videos. And then it was like, hey, you know what? Let's just meet up one day and we'll see what happens. So sort of by helping him solve an issue, we sat there and now we have this podcast. And it's so cool how small things can change so much, right?
They didn't go that fast, but...
Like, they didn't go that... I mean, it was like three, 4 years.
It was like a few years. Yeah.
But yeah.
So that kind of reminds me, like another point is that it is really the smallest thing. A simple phone call to a gymnastics gym got me a client for my social media marketing and also a million viewed video, which is training like a gymnast for 30 days. A simple phone call.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I want to do this video. Are you down? I said, yeah, we did the video. And then a bunch of different aspects branched out from that one phone call.
Yeah.
So and it takes the smallest action.
But there's so many people who don't. I actually had dinner yesterday with a guy who's trying to build his business. And he said, yeah, it would be so great if I would be able to speak to this person. What do you think? Should I send him a message? I said, dude, send him a message. If he doesn't reply, like send a proper message with value. If he doesn't reply, you have the same as what you have right now. But if he does, yes, that could change everything for you. So start calling, start reaching out to people in a smart way, right? That one little message can change your life, basically.
Yes.
100%.
Or one video. And I like about a video is that, especially if you try to, most of the people you reach, like if you're not going for like The Rock or you're not going for like insane, I don't know, you want to, hey, Barack Obama, hit me up. Like that's not, if you're going for that, that's going to be a little bit too, but if you're interested in getting in contact with someone, making a video about that person is 99.9% of the time is enough, because seeing a video about you, maybe like you have 100,000 of subscribers, I have 1.7 million subscribers. If I get a video really made about me and there's someone direct messaging me saying I made a video about you.
And they actually put effort.
They actually put effort. Yeah. Well, I mean, the video is good. I can reply to the video. I can see this and that. There's 100% chance I'm going to see it if the video is actually like good enough and like they actually put in effort. I will see it. If there's a YouTuber, if you want to get Mr. Beast to see a video, you actually can. Like that's going to be a little bit harder because he gets a direct message every single second probably. But then you would have to just put in a little bit more effort, a little bit more time.
Right. And I will say you you have to have that expectation set that you're not always going to get a response to. I made a video with Jeff Cavalier, training like him for 30 days. No comment, no nothing, no response. I didn't expect him to. You know, I was just like, I want to create a video with Jeff. I like his training. And if he responds, it's awesome. But zero response. I don't know if he saw the video. I think he did, though, because he made a video like training like – he made his own video about training like Jeff for 90 days or something like that. But just have the expectation that what you do might not always work. And that's okay. It's a part of the process.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, Jeff Cavalier.
He's massive, though.
Yeah, like, he might get videos like that a little more often, training like Jeff Cavalier, because he is so big. He's so big in the industry.
How often would you say you get videos? Like people?
Not
like
a lot. So that's why. So if someone makes a video about me, I will probably see it.
That's going to increase right now.
There's probably one... good video. Like,
I remember you showing me a few that do not qualify as good videos. Good videos.
Like, there's just weird videos out there.
But
you do
see them.
Yeah, I do see them. I do see them because some people send them to me, for example. And then, I do see them. So I guess if Jeff Cavalier probably saw it. Yeah. The video has like half a million views.
The video has like 800,000 views. It's definitely seen it.
You probably saw it, yeah. Cool. Are there some topics that we should like know about?
Beginning of 2020, I actually had like pretty severe anxiety. It was bad enough where I couldn't really leave my own home. Like I would just start getting anxiety and a panic attack. And that came from getting the stomach flu a while back. Or not a while back, but 2019. I had the stomach flu. It was pretty severe, just throwing up a bunch. And so that created this anxiety where anytime I was in public, I was afraid to get into that state of throwing up, getting sick or whatever. So what happened is I started avoiding all the uncomfortable situations, and that closed me in to my own home. And so eventually, like, I didn't realize I had anxiety at the time. I didn't know what was wrong with me. And then eventually, once it got bad enough, I was like, okay, like, this is an issue. And so once I realized it, then I could start creating a change because I was mindful of the anxiety. So what I started doing is going out to the situations that made me uncomfortable, which is basically anywhere in public, going to a restaurant, at the gym, whatever, anything. And so I would go into public spaces until I got comfortable. And so I would keep pushing the boundaries then, every single time, more uncomfortable, more uncomfortable, more uncomfortable. And then behind that discomfort, there's a lot of growth. And so this anxiety is something that fuels me for my YouTube. I always try to take a challenge to the next level, something extremely uncomfortable, because I know behind that there's a lot of growth. And every single time I do it, I feel so good. I feel unstoppable. I feel like I can go doing whatever I want. And so that feeling of just growth is something that really drives me. And so that's another reason why I do all these challenges on YouTube is it's a lot of... how I like to envision, it's a lot of doors of discomfort, and behind those doors is growth. And for me, I never want to get back to the point where I was before. That was the worst, worst mental state I've ever been in. And so for me, I have to constantly break open these doors and get to the growth behind it. Otherwise, the doors will continue to pile up around me and close me in. Mm. So for me, I'm constantly breaking these discomfort barriers, striving for growth, and that's my goal with my videos. So the 10K video, very uncomfortable. I had to get a whole gym to myself, had to get a bunch of people organized to do it. I was like sweating, like super anxious before doing it. But I got there, I did the video, and I felt incredible after. And so each of the videos, they get bigger and bigger, and that's because it's more and more uncomfortable, and I need to get that growth behind that discomfort.
This was around begin 2020, you said?
That's the brand end, beginning of 2020, actually.
But, but that's also the same time you started to blow up. Has that something to do with each other?
That's right.
Or like you said, I think so. Yeah, you said like obviously the flu 2019, but did it like, because you're getting bigger. Maybe you start like, wait, this is actually getting reality. What is reality? What is
and
happening?
And then the pandemic happening at the same time as well.
Pandemic
which might...
as well.
And so I will say the pandemic, COVID, that was never a part of the anxiety, never a part of the fear. It was simply I was afraid of being in a helpless state because when I had the stomach flu, it was very severe and I felt helpless and I was like panicking. Is that, And so that was the anxiety that I developed. And in order to get over it, I had to expose myself to the uncomfortable situations. And yeah, so that was the beginning, 2020 Brandon, the one just making these videos in parks because I was too afraid to go anywhere else. And yeah, it's just, it's awesome because YouTube helps me grow so much as a person. And that's why I really enjoy doing it. Another reason why, just because it's a massive source of growth for me.
Yeah.
So, well, personal growth.
Well, first of all, thank you for sharing. And I think there's a lot of value in there for a lot of people. And what I found super interesting is that the past three podcasts now that we've had, we had Mo, we had Marijn, and we had you as people who interviewed. And all three of you went something completely different, but went through something. And there's always two choices. And we've spoken about this in others. You can either feel a victim and you can feel sorry for yourself and like, oh, why is this happening to me? I'm going to stay inside. Or you're going to accept the fact this is what it is. And what can I do, you know, to change this? What can I do? And unfortunately, there was actually a study posted today that 50% of students have been depressed last year and 25% of people also because of the pandemic don't see a point in almost in living because they're only focusing on the things that they cannot do. And I think it's amazing what you show, like focus on the things that you can do, make steps every time, make sure that you keep growing, get out of it. And probably if we ask you how you feel now compared to the beginning of 2020.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask. How is Brandon 2021? Yeah.
Oh my God. So much better. I mean, the anxiety is still present and it's honestly necessary. For me, I know you guys ask what's your superpower eventually.
Let's go there. Yeah.
So what is your superpower? Yeah.
For me, my superpower really is the anxiety. It's something, anxiety itself is so powerful. It can really destroy you if you let it. And so if you can use it as a source of fuel for growth, business, YouTube, everything, it's very powerful. And so for me, I've learned to use it as something to fuel me, not destroy me. And so I constantly have this burning like feeling inside me to go do. And it's because I'm using the anxiety to push me to go do everything that I need to do.
Yeah. So lots of people feel anxiety. They feel it constantly. They feel it quite often. And you try to sort of make that feeling when anxiety is present, make that feeling feel like you need to break it. You need to sort of go through. You go to the next door, basically. So you you change the feeling. That's actually very interesting.
Exactly. I use it as fuel. I get almost when it comes up, I'm like, all right, like time to move, time to go, time to do stuff. Because I know like if I stop, those doors are going to start piling up and I'm going to get closed in. And I have this fear of ever getting back to that mental state that I was in before. I never want to be back there. And so that fear is more powerful than anything else. So I will continue to push. That's
So you're turning a negative into a positive, basically, which is super, super cool.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with NLP, Neuro-Linguistic Processing?
Oh, big time. That's actually in my workout program, too.
I was going to say.
I try to teach people.
Yeah, I think what you say has a lot of, like, touching points with NLP as well, and also how you use it to actually get better. For people who are not don't know what NLP is, we're not going to do it right now. Definitely check out neuro-linguistic programming. It's super, super interesting and very powerful, I think.
Huge. For people who don't know, very broad, what is it?
So NLP, well, it's basically sort of neuro-linguistic processing, right? We can see that there's a, how can we say this in like 30 seconds? Basically, we have our senses, right? And our senses is the way that we process everything, all the stimuli that we have, and that can be touch, it can be feeling, can be hearing, can be... And there's a lot of triggers that we have that we are not aware of. So certain sounds, certain smells, right? If you smell a certain thing, the smell you used to have in your house, maybe that reminds you of your mother or a certain voice you hear. And we have triggers that we're not aware of. So probably at some point you were in a crowded place. There's a trigger going back to, oh no, that time I was in a crowded place, I felt bad, and this is what's going to happen.
Exactly.
But once you know that, you can start actually adjusting these triggers. So you can create triggers yourself that will make you feel good. So you see certain really famous entrepreneurs when they go on stage or public speakers, they tap their fingers three times because that to them triggers a certain feeling of confidence. So you can create triggers yourself, and you can also learn to even unlearn certain triggers that are there that you're not aware of. And how to do that is complicated, but it's to learn it is super, super powerful.
Super.
Yeah. All right. So that's very interesting. And you actually have how have you sort of incorporated that into your workout program?
So I just basically go over NLP and I just go over what people can do to help them stay motivated with fitness, maybe just realize certain barriers that are there mentally that they might not know previously. So teaching them being more mindful, to look back in their past, what are their triggers, like you said. Some people might be afraid to go work out because they were bullied for being fat as a kid and in PE class, right? So if they go to the gym, they automatically start feeling anxious. They don't know why. Subconsciously, they might be afraid that other people in the gym are going to judge them that are, you know, for being fat, for being overweight. So they never get into the gym. So I try to teach people in the program how they can get over these mental barriers and how they can stay motivated.
That's super cool.
To achieve their so you're also sort of, you're giving the message to others as well. So you're sending the message as well. So it's not just for yourself, but also for others.
100%. And that's what I wish I could incorporate this more into my channel. But it just, I'm going to try to find a way, but it's so hard. Maybe like in an inspirational, motivational video, like a 30-day challenge, I can talk about anxiety because it's present with every video, every 30-day challenge, especially boxing. That scared me so much. But, you know, I did it. So
yeah, people should watch the video if they haven't done so already.
Yes, 100%.
For sure.
Yeah. 100%. All right, so let's go to the
last question.
You already knew the last question. Yeah.
So you know our last question, right?
Yeah. What is going to be the next big thing? Did you prepare this answer?
Oh, okay. This one, I was confused about this one. Not confused, but like I didn't really know what to say. I think my biggest answer might be cryptocurrency.
That's a good question. That's a good answer. I mean, what is going to be the next big thing? Can indeed be like cryptocurrency itself, could be the NFT space, but it could also be space travel. Next big thing. But it could
Did you see there was a guy standing on a balloon last night? He broke the world record. He was in space and climbed up top of the hot air balloon.
The fuck? No.
Like on the, I don't even I know how.
How did I miss this?
What? I don't know, it was last night. You were saying space travel, so
That's crazy.
Random.
That would be a weird answer because it's not like the next big thing in general. Because I mean, TikTok, if you would have said that, I gave this example quite a few times, but if you would have said that like 2-3 years ago, like people were like, what is TikTok?
Yeah, Musical.ly.
True.
Musical.ly,
at that time, yeah.
I personally don't like TikTok.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I mean, there is some fun stuff on there, but I don't like... Well, compared to YouTube,
be honest, their algorithm is amazing.
Their algorithm is pretty good, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's like...
Oh, so good. Yeah,
like from a business perspective, it's an amazing... Like it's,
they have a good
insane
product.
But you shouldn't have it on your phone because it's toxic. That's my opinion, yeah.
Yeah. Seriously.
Your brother sends me links to TikTok videos like a few times a week.
A lot. Yeah.
They're very funny, though.
Yeah, the ones he sent are quite funny. There are some funny people on there. The thing is, which I'm interested in the future, like, is TikTok going to be the platform which is going to be the platform where people go to for entertainment, or is it the platform where people actually feel like, wait, I just wasted this much time of my life, and when you watch a YouTube video, you can feel pretty fulfilled, or you could feel pretty, I just relaxed, I just watched a pretty epic video.
Yeah.
On TikTok, I've never had a TikTok session or whatever, how you want to call it, and be like, damn, that was a good session, I like that, I will do that tomorrow again, and either way, you will
do it again tomorrow.
You will do it again tomorrow, or whatever.
Yeah, the issue is, and I've said this before, that they're trying to change this TikTok, so they're really trying to push educational content.
Good content, value, yeah.
Because they want to start showing more and more ads, and they cannot show ads to 13-year-old girls who are looking at people who are dancing. Yeah, exactly, Stan, thank you for demonstrating here. So they want to push more educational content, but I don't think that's really working too much yet. Or maybe
no.
I mean, maybe educating about memes.
I'm getting a lot of Gary V videos. Yeah. There
Gary V videos, yeah. I mean, that's just what you're liking, or what you're like, that's
what I'm probably watching.
That's a TikTok algorithm for you, but yeah. All right,
cool,
so
man.
Next big thing, cryptocurrency. I mean, I think most people would agree, at least it's not going away probably anytime soon, or tomorrow it crashes to 0%.
Yeah, no.
Oh, potentially, yeah. I just think of it in terms of inflation, the US dollar is, you know, massive inflation right now. So I think it's important to put your money in any kind of investment, or not any kind, but strategically, right? Index
skipped
bonds,
over that
crypto.
A little too fast.
Yeah. So we're not going to go into the whole topic now. We should just have you back on the podcast some other day. But
okay. Yeah. No worries.
Crypto is the worst hedge against inflation, because if you do it to have your money in a safe place where it's safe for inflation, crypto is not the way to go. I'm not saying crypto.
Agreed.
It could go 10x your money, but if you want to hedge it, what you said with like ETFs makes more sense.
I was going to say, that's my main goal, that, and I do very little into crypto. But at the same time, there's a specific app where you get annual interest, which is really nice. It's like 9%, 5%, which is awesome. Yeah. So I try to keep a little bit in that. But yeah, like you said, I stick with stocks.
Yeah, you're staking your crypto into BlockFi, for example.
Or a Voyager. Yeah, is the okay, one.
Yeah. Yeah. Or once, you know, your videos get a bit more views, get some real estate, because that's very nice to hedge against inflation and to get passive.
I want to get into real estate, yeah.
Because where are you now, actually?
I'm in California, so real estate out here is pretty going to be pretty tough to get
and
into.
And the space you are in, like, is this your apartment or your room?
Oh, yeah, I'm in my room right now. Cool. I do want to move out and get my own my own space here pretty soon. I think beginning 2022 is when that's going to happen.
I mean, no rush. You're just saving up money right now. So, I mean.
True. Yeah, just stacking.
Yeah. If you want to start getting into real estate, last thing I'll say, start with garbage boxes, for example.
Garbage box, yeah.
Garbage box.
Yeah, so they're way, way, way cheaper than houses, and they get a higher percentage-wise return on investment, at least if you're in a very urban area where people don't have space to storage everything. So that's why you have storage loggers or garage boxes you can buy.
Except if you just have laying around like a few million, then you can do both.
Oh, and Stan, are you in real estate right now?
Sort of.
Oh, yeah, you're in the... Yeah, nah, okay.
It is an investment you didn't buy. Well,
A real investor would not call this an investment because it's something I'm using. Yeah, this is my... Like, I bought this studio. So, yes, that's my investment. I'm working on buying a place as well, an apartment. And that's definitely also... I mean, it's a home, but it's also an investment, but it's a home.
There's this weird stigma of people who say you should never buy the house you live in. You should rent the house you live in and use the money to buy a house to rent out. I've never really understood this, to be honest, because I've always bought the houses where I live in, and then I'm in a fortunate position that I can buy some other real estate.
Yeah.
But I don't get it. I think that's wasting money. I mean, maybe if you've do like the whole entrepreneur laptop lifestyle, you don't want to buy a place where you're living because you're away too much, but that's the only case.
So you feel stuck and you can't travel and you can't, okay, it kind of makes sense, but I mean,
we're drifting off topic.
All right, man, thank you so much for being on the podcast, and thank you so much for being this open and just saying basically everything. I think we've covered a lot of mysteries of Brendan Kalal. I wanted to say Brendan William, but Brendan Kalal. Which I hope some viewers and some listeners actually are, hey, wait, that's some new info about Brendan.
I think so.
So thank you, man. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. Hope you enjoyed it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, guys. Thank you so much for having me. Such an awesome experience.
Cool, man.
And everyone watching, smash like, subscribe.
Exactly. And all the links to Brendan's socials will be in the show notes description everywhere. Be sure to check it out. Thank you guys so much, man, for being here.
And make sure to check it out. Everything is, you know where to find it. Smash like, subscribe it, bell, and I'll see you in the next episode. Bye bye, booy.